Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Roads 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. Another triple-double for Russell Westbrook of the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Westbrook has the rebound. A three is needed to tie. 10 seconds. Crossing the timeline, Russ to the wing. Leans in, launches. 28 for three. Got it! Cha-ching! A Thunder money ball. 102 each. 7.1 left.
Well, okay. Our play-by-play call of the day. Insert sponsor here. I think it's a great segment. I always enjoy the play-by-play call of the day. Great segment. All right. Penn State football, five practices down, three in pads, 10 more to go, last one being the blue-white game. So nine more practices before the blue-white game. So that's where they are right now. Next one's coming up on Saturday. We bring in old friend, respected friend, outstanding reporter, Frank Bodani, York Daily Record. Hi, Frank. Great to have you back with us.
Great. Good afternoon, Steve. How's your day going?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for asking. Okay, so yeah. So one-third poll, and at the one-third mark, James Franklin had a chance to talk with the media yesterday. What did you take out of that?
Well, I think it was interesting, maybe almost more to see what Saquon Barkley had to say about his him and Marcus Allen, their spring break trip down to Florida, because he's always finding a way to get better than he was.
Right.
And I think that's what people want to know is, okay, Saquon was so great. We have all the highlight reels of him. But what can he, what's he going to do this year? Can he actually be better? Where does he go from here? Well, I think he's always finding a way to try to get himself another edge, even though he's so good as it is. So I think both of those guys, it was good to hear how they use their time off. And James Franklin did talk about Lamont Wade, which I think a lot of fans are interested in, the true freshman. He seems right on course to push for playing time, which is interesting to me because the cornerbacks are already pretty stacked back there. So
Right. Where
does he fit in? But if he's that good, he's gonna do some pushing. So that's a good thing, I think, to hear.
Yeah, the corner position is interesting because you have obviously Haley Reed, Christian Campbell, and Amani Oyewariye already in that mix, and then of course he gets in there as well. But he is going to be somebody that the coach is going to get questions about because of the resume he brings to the table entering school.
Yeah, I think it's another sign of where the program's going because you just mentioned the depth that they have at a certain position. They didn't have that just even 2 years ago, nothing like it. Then you'd be able to sign a kid like Lamont Wade, who's a difference maker from day one. That's something that James Franklin really couldn't do when he first got here either. You keep doing that a little bit every year, you see where it ends up pretty quickly, you win some games and you start rolling and you can bring in a couple of difference makers like that can play right away. And all of a sudden things are a lot better.
What does it say about a program? Because you brought up Barkley, that the person who is perceived to be your best player quite possibly is your hardest worker.
Well, I mean, you're getting not just everything you want when you get a kid like that as a player, but then look at the impact he will have on the rest of the team, on his teammates. I think that's why they were so good. If I could pinpoint one thing from early in the year when they lost those two games, is the way that Trace McSorley, Saquon Barkley, and a couple of other guys handled themselves after the losses. and they're young, but the way that they went into the post game talking to us, their body language, the way they dealt with their teammates, you knew that, wow, they just got beat. They just got crushed by Michigan, but these guys,
right,
like, they have it together. And that's the impact, I think, so invaluable. And then younger guys like Miles Sanders and some of the others will learn, you would hope. They'll learn from this, carry that forward.
After the Rose Bowl, did you sense that same resolve?
Oh, with Saquon?
With all of them that you talked to, and in particular him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think, if anything, you could see it right then and there that they knew they had unfinished business, that it was going to hurt them, that they weren't going to be able to take care of it for another 8 months, in a way, but that didn't matter what they did, they knew that they could, that they knew that the program still needs steps to go, and that they were focused almost, you know, we're not satisfied. And it was just the way they handled it, you know, very professionally, I thought. And knew they had, these guys had their heads on straight. And I think you got to give credit to the staff for bringing in not just really good players, but I think it seems like they're bringing in more guys like this that not just have it from the neck down, but from the neck up too, you know.
What's it been like for you covering this team? I know it's, you know, they're going to get older before our eyes here, but what's it been like for you professionally trying to cover them, pro and con?
Last year's team,
and which is going to include a lot of players that people say that see this year.
Last season was unlike any season because of the way these younger players, well, the mix of kids, the way that they took a tough situation, an unknown situation, and did what they did. I'd never seen that since starting to cover the team in 94. I think people are so interested in how do you follow that up? Well, all signs look like they're going to follow it up pretty well because the key guys back never wavered last year. And there were so many reasons to waver, I guess. So I guess sometimes you see teams, and there's young kids that bad stuff happens, injuries happen, tough losses happen. They just can't respond the way that fans want them to. Well, these guys not only did that, they did way more than anyone could have expected. So having that core group back, I mean, I think it's really, it's more, I don't know, it's been a rough 5 years, I think.
Yeah, sure.
Not just for fans, but I think for people covering the team, because there's always, every time you think you have something, okay, I got a handle on this, something else breaks that is not really good to deal with, right, at all hours of the day and night. I mean, Bill O'Brien leaving on New Year's Eve at midnight or whatever. I mean, I think that sums it all up, Steve.
Yeah, I think it sums it all up. As time has gone, what kind of interview has Trace McSorley become?
I think he's become more comfortable, a little more thoughtful. From the beginning, he was always, he wasn't mechanical. He just, James Franklin always talked about how he never gets really down and never gets really up. I think that's kind of how he did his interviews from the beginning. He was surprisingly with it and together, even right after the Tax Slayer Bowl when he had hardly ever played. He hasn't changed a whole lot to me. I mean, we don't get to spend that much time around him, but you could just see the focus, I guess. So, I don't know. That's a good way to describe it, maybe, from the way he speaks. He is dialed in. And I think not getting up and not getting down, not letting things bother him. I mean, gosh, how hard is that? That's so underrated, especially at his position, that he doesn't let bad losses, bad plays, drop passes, getting crushed by defenders. None of it seems to bother him. So,
Frank, it's always a pleasure. It's great to hear you.
Yeah, hope to talk to you again soon. Enjoy the weekend coming up, too.
Yep, you too. Enjoy it, Frank. Thanks. We'll talk soon.
All right.
Frank Bonanni, York Daily Record. We'll come back with more in a moment. Great to have everybody on board with us today. 800-795-9565. Baseball season is around the corner. It starts on Monday here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Mark Lawrence, tickles the ivory. We like to use all the talent in the station for our bumper music. So, we try to incorporate Lawrence as often as we can.
Multi-talented, more than you think.
Much more than yes. Great to have everybody with us. 800-795-9565 is the number. Creeping toward the Final Four, which is coming up this weekend. And it's interesting how they do this in a football stadium, which is what they use now, all for, you know, a domed football stadium for the Final Four. Now they do it as simple. They put the court in the center. So how do you get the seats to then somehow meet up with it? Well, they actually take the bottom level of, let's in this case, University of Phoenix Stadium. And they put a platform over it, a seating platform over it that graduates its way down the court and extends from the what would be the end of the normal lower level of the bowl there, and they extend it all the way down, and then they take individual chairs, albeit padded. These are not the ones you get over at the Church Bazaar where they're all metal and you unfold them and put them down. These are the padded seats that you normally see courtside in buildings, and they put all of those up individually in each row. They have an entire crew that does it all the way around. That's how they extend it down to the court, and the court's raised, which we've talked about before. I mean, there's so many things, so many elements that these teams have to get used to. For example, if you're a Big Ten team playing in something like this, the shooting background is something you cannot get used to. It's just something you have to get. You have to go out and just work it out yourself. But in terms of something else, the race court is an issue. Big Ten teams at least have Minnesota, for example, which they can all talk about playing on the raised court, and it is about 3 to 3.5 feet high. I mean, I have seen players slide off the court. And what I mean is slide off the court, and I saw Vashawn Leonard, and Leonard played for years in the NBA, mostly with the Miami Heat. Vashawn Leonard one night fall off the court and have his ribs go right into one of the railings. I mean, and he's used to it. He played, you know, he played his entire college career there. So that is another element to this. The court is raised. And that is different. And it is something, believe me, the players are very, very aware of when they go to these places. Well, now you have the element of raised court, players aren't used to it, and dome venue. You go, well, North Carolina played in one last year. That's last year. It's a different building. It's all fresh for everybody. All fresh. So there are a few elements that are different about this in order to accommodate the huge crowd that'll be on hand. They should be able to draw for WrestleMania when they had it there in 2 years ago? You're the expert on this. But obviously, I've tried to do a lot of reading on the building and so forth. They drew 72,000. For football, it's normally a 65,000-seat stadium. And you can squeeze maybe up to 70,000 in there if you do it in a different way. But they had 72,000 for WrestleMania. They're going to have about the same crowd for Saturday. Now, are you going to have the same crowd on Monday? Well, let's face it, your team doesn't win. I mean, do you want to really stick around? And a lot of times they try to sell it to as many of the fans of the two teams remaining to have them fill the gaps in the building. Or you can be like Kramer and just be a seat filler of the Tony Awards. So it is different. And the first game of the night, the 6:09 game on Saturday, could be the first team to 65 wins between South Carolina and Gonzaga. Two excellent defensive teams. If you heard Kevin Kugler on our show on, when did we have Kevin on? Did we have Kevin on Tuesday?
We did.
And he'll be the radio voice of the Final Four. Jim Nance is the TV voice. Kevin Kugler is the radio voice of the Final Four. And what you saw, what he talked about right away is that the first question I asked him was about Gonzaga, and he said, you know what? He said, nobody ever asked that question about them. I always talk about how many points they score. He said, and he saw Gonzaga play four times in person in the last 2 weeks. He said, and that's the thing that jumped out to him right away. He says, these guys can really play defense. And South Carolina, Thornhill is not only an excellent scorer, and he is a scorer. I mean, he is. Penn State fans can relate to this. There are very few power guards in college basketball. DJ Newbill was one of them. And Thornhill is one of the rarities, a power guard. And a lot of teams don't know how to defend a power guard. I remember Aaron Kraft, great reputation as a defender at Ohio State, except he could never defend DJ Newbill, could never defend him. He kept trying and trying, couldn't do it. Being a power guard is a completely different animal for people to guard. You really have to take almost a small forward and put them on them and go power for power against them. Kraft was not big enough, strong enough to handle DJ Newbill. Couldn't do it. We talked about that over and over in the broadcast. The year Penn State swept Ohio State, it was Newbill and Kraft just, he could handle almost everybody else. He couldn't handle Newbill. Guy like Kramer, who played at Purdue, one of the really great defensive players out there, he was 6'4 and a powerful upper body. He can handle it. He can handle it. And Rafael Davis from Purdue, better at it, no question. Because again, size, in terms of powerful upper body, Davis like 6'5", 6'6", something like that. Just really impressive. But power guards are a rarity in the game. They are a rarity. In the college game, a rarity. And because they are a rarity, it becomes tougher for everybody to guard because they don't guard somebody like that in practice. It's a very difficult assignment because you have to figure out who mimics the guy in practice. Well, nobody has any idea who mimics the guy in practice. Probably have to take a power forward and probably try that.
Yeah, it's just going to be interesting to see the three teams, none of them named North Carolina, if this scene is going to be too big for them on Saturday night.
Well, in the first game, I don't think that's a factor. Neither one have been there. So to me, it's about the same, isn't it? I mean, it's about the same. And that's... I think the starts, the first 8 minutes of the game, to your point, Sean, I think the first 8 minutes are important for three of the teams in particular. And North Carolina's been there before. Just because North Carolina's been there before doesn't mean that they can't get nervous at the scene either. Because they'll have a couple guys that are playing out there that have never played in this situation either. And some people just have no problem. They just go out and they just go right out there and just start playing. I think the team that would surprise me, that would be awed the most by this, would that be that would surprise me? I'd be shocked if Gonzaga was.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sued and Mike Frelazzo, same thing. Can't put them in the same room anymore.
No.
Hey, now that people have seen the light after last season. Huge Frelazzo fan base out there. Huge.
Yeah, the whole week one hiding of the extension cord.
Oh, that did it. That did it. Right there. That pettiness. A lot of fans started to see the light at that moment as to what they've really been dealing with.
Actually, it wasn't the hiding. It was the, oops, I forgot the extension cord.
Same thing. Same thing. It's just amazing. Suddenly the Wally Pippa Broadcasting can't stand the fact that Lou Gehrig has stepped in and he's hitting home runs every week. All right. By the way, how is the Pipster doing? Is he all right?
He's doing good. Told me to tell you hi.
Well, good. How both the sales have gone well?
Yeah.
Okay, good. It's okay. Time now for the sports bozo of the day. It is not the suit. The Raiders against the Oakland Coliseum. The Raiders are losing fans. No getting around it. And they are definitely. Jason LaCanfora of CBS Sports wrote earlier this week about the Raiders losing fans. And again, the NFL and what they've done with the last two moves in particular have essentially shown, we really don't care that much about the fan base. We want the bright, shiny objects. Okay. That's what you want to do. That's your prerogative. Well, it appears now the Raiders are also losing the support of the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum Authority. That's kind of a big deal. They're the entity that runs the stadium the Raiders plan to play in over the next 3 years. It is a big deal, except the Raiders do have one-year options on 17 and 18, but there is no option for 19. That's why I brought that up earlier. And according to the Oakland Coliseum, they actually would make money with the Raiders leaving. Why? Well, the Raiders pay about $7 million in rent, but they say that they pay out $8 million. They lose $1 million a year having them in the building. Okay. There is a big caveat in whether they stay or not. And that is the Raiders are only going to stay if they're getting support. Well, in 17 and 18, there's no choice. The Raiders have the option on each of the... It's not as if the Raiders have the option through 18. They are 2 one-year options where the Raiders can opt to leave after 17 if they want or opt to leave after 18. But staying through 19 probably is not going to happen. And Oakland City Councilman Larry Reed wants the team gone immediately. And Draymond Green, they play at Oracle, which is right across the street, literally, is calling for fans in Oakland to boycott Raiders games. So they've been trying to do this. We'd like to have our cake and eat it too deal, where like, oh, look, you know, we're still the Oakland Raiders. I mean, we're still the Oakland Raiders. Now, you're the Las Vegas Raiders, and these people know it. They know it. I mean, Sean, would you support your team? You say, look, the teams in this state, there's no... The last one that was even threatened was the Pittsburgh Penguins. They almost went to Kansas City, almost went to Portland. And then Mario Lemieux stepped in and helped to save them. But if the Steelers were to move but had two more years in Pittsburgh, would you still support them?
Man, I think it all depends on where they would go.
Say they went to San Antonio. I mean, I'm talking like if they said we're, because the Alamo Dome obviously exists.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, if San Antonio were to get a team that had to build a new stadium, I mean, I've done obviously an Alamo Bowl, and while it's a fine facility, and they're going to have the Final Four there next year, you know, between luxury suites and things like that, there's certain things that have to upgrade in there to make sure it was to the level they needed it to be financially. But say the Steelers say, hey, look, we're going to stay two more years in Pittsburgh, three more years in Pittsburgh, but we're going to San Antonio in 2020. Would you still support the Steelers?
I don't have a beef with San Antonio. I would say, I probably off the top of my head, I'd say yes. I would stay with them and support them.
Even though they abandoned you.
Well, the Steelers are my team. I mean, as long as they would stick with the nickname, stick with the colors.
But they abandoned you. Okay, I know this is kind of hard because the Steelers are not moving.
Yes.
Okay, they are not moving. So the thought of this is not, but if the Eagles or the Steelers were to do what the Raiders are doing, you could honestly support them the next 3 years knowing that they will not be in existence 3 years from now?
I would.
Okay.
I would.
Now, the Houston Oilers went through this.
Mm-hmm.
They were approved for relocation to Nashville in 96, and the plan was for them to play at the Astrodome in 96 and 97. Well, they did it in 96, but guess what happened? They lost all their fan support, so they ended up going to Memphis and playing there temporarily for 2 years before going to Nashville.
Yeah, if the Steelers would move to a different city, like let's say a city that would, like Cleveland, Cincinnati, or Baltimore, if they would lose one of their teams and stay within the division, then I probably would, abandon them. Just because of the fact that, you know, the Steelers are rivals against those three teams, you know, in their division.
Now, the Raiders have a couple of other options besides San Antonio, Sam Boyd Stadium, or Levi's Stadium. There's also the possibility they could play at Cal Stadium in Berkeley, Memorial Stadium, or, believe it or not, they could play at AT&T Park where the Giants play. You're saying, what? They used to have a bowl game there. Well, they don't have one there anymore. They moved it to Levi's Stadium. But remember, Cal's football team, and this is when Sandy Barber was the athletic director at Cal, they were redoing Memorial Stadium up on the hill. And Cal played its entire 2011 season at AT&T Park. A lot of people, I don't think, remember that or realize that. So they have other options, but the Coliseum doesn't want them. Now, I have to hand out a worldwide bozo of the day. This is outside of sports, but I saw this earlier today. I'll mispronounce the last name. But European Union boss Jean-Claude Juncker this afternoon issued a jaw-dropping threat to the United States saying that he could campaign to break up the country in revenge for the support for Brexit. He said that in an extraordinary speech, he said that he would push for Ohio and Texas to split from the rest of America if the United States doesn't change its tune and become more supportive of the EU. Oh, there's so many jokes that come into play. Okay. I had to get that one out there. Sorry. It's more for my man Lawrence to talk about in the morning. Okay. Final Four coming up this weekend. Gonzaga, obviously, is a team that, look, it's amazing what Gonzaga has done, what Gonzaga basketball has done. Gonzaga, the university, 25 years ago, Catholic University, Spokane, was losing money. And suddenly the basketball program, starting with Dan Munson, got to be good. And it changed everything there financially. It changed everything there financially. For the university, not just for athletics. It's amazing what the correlation, just getting the name out there, a little bit of pride. And it changed everything around for them financially as a university. Now, getting to the Final Four, I mean, it's a level that they've never been to before, obviously. Penn State has only played Gonzaga once, and that was before any of this started. And that was in Wyoming. The only time they've ever played them with me doing the games. And, of course, I go back to the 1920s. What? But they've gone out, and what's happened is that financially the university now is in great shape. And that's been a direct correlation, they know, they know what it means. It's put them on the map, and it got them out of financial trouble, believe it or not. So, and it's done a lot for, obviously, the city of Spokane. It's amazing what they've done with this thing. It is quite the following up there now. And it's done wonders for enrollment at Gonzaga. Gonzaga is not a big school in any way, shape, or form. You know, this is not the 60,000-70,000 enrollment school. But they have been able to take this and they turn what was a university deficit. And because the basketball program got to be really good, it did put the name out there in a positive light. It's amazing what they've done with it. I mean, things have really, the place has really changed. In 1999 is when this thing first really started rolling. Total enrollment, now listen to this, in 18 years. Total enrollment at Gonzaga has increased 86.4% in the last 18 years. They had 4,061 students in 1999, 7,572 now. Undergraduate admission applications growing 300% from 99 to now. Freshman enrollment up 124.9%. from 99 to 2017. The annual budget has risen 289.2% from 72.7 million to 283 million. Full-time faculty up 55.5%. Average class size at Gonzaga was 22 students in 1999, still only 24 students in 2017. It's amazing what just getting the word out about the university through basketball has done for them image-wise. I mean, we saw a lot of the same correlations here over the years in football. I mean, a lot of the same correlations here. football team got really great. You know, it's a state university to begin with, but all of a sudden this became the destination for a lot of people. And when you look at Gonzaga in 1998, again, this started in 99, but they were in financial trouble. They had a $1 million deficit in 1998 as a university. A small group of faculty wanted to suggest the university consider abandoning Division I athletics to save money. They eliminated 30 positions. They laid off 5 employees. I mean, they were in trouble. Amazing. Now they're rolling in cash. And this has happened other places. This is referred to as the Flutie effect. Doug Flutie, Hail Mary against Miami 84, right? Heisman Trophy year, right? Guess what happened? Enrollment up 16% Boston College next year. Alec Verkhomish hit that three-pointer for Northern Iowa to beat Kansas. You've seen Ali's on the bench right now for Nebraska basketball as a graduate assistant coach. Guess what Northern Iowa had in admission the next year? Up 30% the next year. It's called the Flutie effect, and it's now happened at Gonzaga. Donations are at an all-time high at Gonzaga. Capital campaign launched just last year. $226 million already raised of the goal of $250. Oh, and by the way, the SAT numbers are higher than ever, too, up there. 3.71 GPA, 1290 SAT score. I mean, Sean and I have 1290 on our SATs. I mean, that's combined. We don't brag about it. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Lincoln continues to satisfy the most discerning buyer by making American luxury affordable. If you are looking for a midsize SUV, the Lincoln MKX has to be on your list. Sunbury Motors Lincoln has a brand new 2016 Black Velvet MKX all-wheel drive with navigation and panoramic vista roof with an MSRP of $48,640 for only $43,352. That's $5,288 in savings. You can choose from 12 MKXs in stock now. Sunbury Motors Lincoln has 5 2017 Lincoln Continentals in stock, ready for the test drive of your life. The 2017 Continental won the coveted 2017 AutoGuide.com Reader's Choice Luxury Car of the Year Award. Sunbury Motors has a 2017 Continental with an MSRP of $48,315, discounted to $46,315. Now is the time to see why more people are realizing they can move up to a brand new Lincoln from Sunbury Motors Lincoln in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. We're your official home for digital media. Oh, I'm sorry. Wrong script. Great to have you with us on the show today.
I was going
to
say, I didn't send you that script.
It's just something that's ingrained in my mind.
Speaking of digital, Steve Jones Show podcast now available on Google Play and iTunes. So
does iTunes know this?
Working out pretty well. Actually, first hour, as we're running this live, first hour of the podcast is already posted on iTunes. So things working very, very smoothly. So if you're a podcast fan of the show, subscribe today to our podcasts. And if you do listen to us on iTunes, do not hesitate to leave a comment. We'd appreciate it.
Can I comment on who put it together?
Since you have an iPhone and access to iTunes, you certainly can. Or you can just text that person directly. It's up to you.
People, no, I want it out public.
I was thinking, why waste time? Just go straight to the source.
No. I want the middleman to see what's actually going on. That's right.
Before we enjoy the breakfast, you're going to see how the sausage is made.
Oh, I'm sick of that term all week long. It's all part of how the sausage is made. Look, will you people just get to work and do something? Okay? All right. You know, when I get ready for a football game, I don't invite everybody in to watch how the, quote, sausage is made. I just go and just get it done, okay? So, like, why don't you join the rest of America and just get it done? All right? That'd be fun.
And you are getting it done because you told me earlier this week that have you finished your prep for Akron already?
Oh, I'm already working on Pitt.
There you go. Boom.
And I'll have Pitt done tomorrow morning.
Awesome.
Then we'll work on Georgia State. And then we'll go from there to Iowa, blah, 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 all the way through to the end, which is Maryland. And then we'll work on basketball and start with Montana and go from there. That's how we do it. Try to stay ahead of what's going on. It also helps when I go out and do speaking engagements. I mean, because I'm always asked about the opponents and so forth. And if you get it done this early like this, not only set you up for the season, but when somebody asks a question about opponents, and every time I speak, I always get a question about opponents. I'm able to recall things I've jotted down and notes and so forth. That makes it much easier to answer the question. At least answer it with some semblance of knowledge. Or as much as I have. You listen to this show every day. You know it's a struggle. Come on. Did you see New England's going to get a foot of snow on April Fool's Day?
Wow.
How appropriate.
Okay, we'll check in with your brother. Hopefully he'll be available to join us tomorrow.
12 to 18 inches on Saturday.
We're your home for news, sports, weather, and your home for the Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.